Welcome to Minute 90 of Movie Around Minute, the daily podcast where we take a wild trip through the 1987 John Hughes comedy, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me today on this credit minute, but it's still going to be a fun minute to talk about. So joining me today is Brian Lockhart of Marvel Events Timeline and a whole bunch of other shows, including the Marine Corps Minute, or the Marine Corps Minute, I think it's called.
Yeah.
And the Hamilton Minute, Hamilton Shot by Shot and all that stuff. So welcome back to the show, Brian. I haven't talked to you since last season.
Yeah, that's true. Well, thanks for having me back. I appreciate being on.
Well, you did such a great job last time, you know, talking about The Great Escape. So I figured, all right, I'll give you prime minutes here, and I'll let you talk about the credits with me.
Oh yeah, I would say you saved the best for last, I guess, right?
Of course
do it.
Well, second to last. You're the penultimate guest,
right?
But yeah,
yeah, I'm setting it up. Yeah,
yeah, of course. But that works. That's good. You know, I don't have a problem with it. I mean, as we all know, credits is part of the movie. It's an important part of the movie. You know, it tells everyone who worked on this movie. You know, we both know, talking about movies minute by minute, you know, that it takes thousands upon thousands of people to get a whole movie to work. And, you know, you got to at least give those people a little bit of credit, even though most of the time, unless it's a Marvel movie, most people are not going to sit and watch it and read through everything. Or if you're doing a movies by minute podcast, and then you'll actually sit and read through them to try and find some interesting stuff.
You know, I appreciate the you know, the movies from the 80s and 90s where, you know, the credits are long enough, you know, a couple minutes. It goes over a couple minutes, but it's not like 10 minutes because there's like 1,000, you know, CGI animators, you know, you have to acknowledge. So it's a lot quicker than what we're more modern movies are used to.
Or the Lord of the Rings where they have a half hour of credits, you know.
Yeah. Right.
That's just a little too much, but yeah. and I mean, one of the strange things about doing minute by minute dealing with credits is that 11 seconds of it we already talked about yesterday, because until it's able to scroll up, you know, because you go all the way down to the whatever's listed at the bottom. So, you know, we basically will only have 49 seconds to talk about today. You know, but still works unless you have something to say about those 11 seconds beforehand.
No, I think I'm all set.
So I would basically say that minute 90, which again, I'm shocked that I've gone through 90 episodes of this already, but minute 90 begins with the credits of the video assistant, and it will end with a credit for Steve Martin's hair design. So. Yeah, I mean, we basically get the last four normal credits in this movie. You know, we get the video assist, location manager, property master, and assistant property master. You know, and then after that, it jumps over to the soundtrack. You know, we get to see about the whole, you know, what they used to do very differently than they do today. You know, about how they list the various songs in movies and stuff like that. So, you know, they have a line that says soundtrack album available on Hughes Music, MCA Records, cassettes, and compact discs. So the first thing that jumped out at me is the fact that they're listing it as Hughes Music, MCA Records, you know, because I guess it's his production company. He's the one who is making sure that all this comes out.
Yeah. I saw that like jumped right out, and I'm like, did he have his own almost like music label or, you know, production company?
He had his own production company that I know because it was for producing the movies.
But yeah, all his movies have a lot of, you know, are they have like a really, they all almost always have a really good soundtrack. So I was like, does he make a lot of like a lot of dough or headway in like, hey, you know, I've curated these songs for the movie. These soundtracks make a lot of money. You know, I basically produce the soundtrack. You know, that's what I was wondering.
Yeah, seriously. But I mean, what I found really interesting is, again, this is 1987, and they mention there that there are records, cassettes, and compact discs. Okay, now you and I were both born in the 70s. We grew up in the 80s. I didn't know anything about the compact discs in 1987. Mm-hmm. You know, it wasn't really something that was known, but I like the fact that it mentions all three: records, cassettes, and compact discs. So I dove in a little bit to just give people a little bit of an overview as to what these three different recording mediums are. Okay, so first of all, a record. Originally, it was known as a phonograph record, or sometimes known as a gramophone record. Right. And it's an analog sound storage medium in the form of a flat disc with an inscribed modulated spiral groove. Usually the groove begins on the outside by the periphery and ends near the center of the disc. And they used to make them from shellac, which I don't really know what that is. Do you have any idea what that is?
No, I've heard of it, but I don't know what it is.
Yeah, I've heard of it also. I have no idea what that is. And then in the 1940s, they started producing them on polyvinyl chloride, which is known as vinyl. And that's something that, you know, most records that we know about these days were made on vinyl. Okay. So it was the primary medium used for music reproduction throughout the entire 20th century. It started being used in the late 1880s. And by the 1980s, digital media, when they started having compact discs and stuff like that, gained a much larger market share of what people were using. And basically, after 1991, they stopped making records. You know, since the 90s, there are some records that are being made, but in the 90s and early 2000s, most of the people who used these records at the time were disc jockeys and you know, people who were doing work with music, but not your everyday, you know, average Joe, I guess you can say. They were not doing that. And as of 2017, there were only 48 record pressing facilities around the entire world, 18 of them in the U.S. and 30 in other countries. Hmm. So I'm sure you've heard of the phrase broken record. Right.
Oh yeah. So some people record, say I go on like one.
It's possible. It's possible. not yet. You haven't reached that point yet, so you're good with me at least. Yeah. You know, so the term broken record actually refers to some sort of malfunction where the needle will skip and jump back and forth to the previous groove, and it continues to play the same section over and over indefinitely. So is that what people complain about with you? Is that what you're saying?
Definitely my kids.
Well, they say, Dad, you're a broken record. You sound like a broken record. Do your kids know what a broken record is?
No, they mostly just say I'm cringe and a boomer. But, you know, that it applies. They know I just go on and you hear the same things over and over again.
No. Okay. Do you know who invented the phonograph?
It wasn't like Edison or somebody like that, was it?
It was. It was actually Thomas Edison. Very good. Thomas Edison invented the phonograph in 1877. Hmm. Okay, and it was able to both record and reproduce sound. One of the good things about vinyl records is that they are very strong and they don't break very easily. But what's the biggest problem with them?
They're big.
They scratch.
Wow. True. Yeah.
And that's what caused the broken record. And they attract dust all the time, which is why most records, when I remember when I was a kid, most records you saw them with dust covers. You know, you'd have to put them back in the dust covers. I don't know how much it really would help, you know, in order to do that. Not really sure. And sometimes the vinyl records could get warped by heat, or if you you know, leave them out in the sun, or things like that. So that's that's another reason why people would always keep them in a in a dust cover and then put it in the cardboard box or the cardboard what would you even call it? Cardboard case?
Yeah, I would.
It's like a slot where you would put it in. You know, I remember they were very thin cases of cardboard, you know, for each of them that you could put them in.
Right.
So that's what I got about records. So the next thing that they talked about were cassettes. Right. So again, you and I know probably know better than than anyone born after the 80s, what cassettes are. So do you know what the official name of a cassette is?
I do not.
They are known as either compact cassettes or music cassettes. Sometimes people call them tape cassettes or cassette tapes or audio cassettes, but most people just call them either a tape or a cassette. And that's an analog magnetic tape recording format that is able to both record and play back. It was created by the Dutch company Philips in September 1963.
Oh.
Yeah, I didn't know that either. And they made two different types. There was the type that you can buy pre-recorded cassettes, like you buy an album on it, and then they have other ones that are blank, that they're recordable, that you can write on them. I remember they had those little things on the side that if you punch them out, then you can't record on them unless you put like a piece of tape over it.
Yeah,
They had those in
I remember
video
that.
tapes also. Yeah, the whole thing.
Yes.
So it was much
Yep.
easier. All you do is just put a piece of tape on it, and you can record over it without a problem.
Right.
So they originally designed them to be used for dictation machines, but they quickly became used for audio and home recording, and eventually people started using them for storage while using computers.
Oh, yeah.
Right? The first time that someone put a cassette player in a car was in 1968. And between 1970 and the early 2000s, it was always considered one of the two most common formats of pre-recorded music. First, it was working at the same time as the vinyl records, and then afterwards, once they switched to compact discs, because it was basically the bridge between the two of them. So they had the same time the compact discs were going. People were still. I remember I didn't want to get rid of my cassettes. Up until probably the mid 2000s, I had tons and tons of cassettes that I would be listening to all the time. I didn't want to move over to CDs. Same thing with video cassettes.
I mean, I still have, I mean, I have a lot of CDs, but I have a lot of cassettes still. I got rid of a lot, but there's still a few that I kept because I acquired my grandmother's car at one point, which had a cassette tape in it. So I pulled all those tapes out, and guess who was cruising around in an old person's car for a while? It was me, listening to the 80s, mixtapes that I made, 80s and 90s.
If it works, why not?
Yeah, it still works, so I'm glad I kept
Wait, do you
some of
still
them
do
at
it?
least. No, but I actually do have an old I actually have a Sony Walkman that still works, and every once in a while I'll pull it out and I'll throw a tape in of something that never got replaced on CD or MP3, and I'll just listen to it.
Oh, wow.
Like
Very
when I'm
interesting.
mowing or something. Yeah,
Yeah.
I'm tell you, I'm old school. I'm like Star Lord. I'm like Star Lord of the movies by Menace Community.
You're a Star Lord, but you're living in our world as opposed to
Right.
somewhere in space, which is a little more of a problem for him to be actually, getting music from somewhere else since he hadn't been back
Right.
there to Terra. To Terra.
Right.
Even though he's a Terran. So in the 70s and 80s, the cassettes became even more popular because they became very effective and convenient and a portable way to listen to music. Because they were making stereo tape decks and boom boxes and the thing that you mentioned earlier, a Walkman. Do you know what year the Walkman was created?
You're gonna tell me like the 70s, but I thought I was like 83 or something like that.
It was 1979. You're close, close,
I
close.
see.
Yeah. And basically, once the Walkman took off, it defined the portable music market for the entire decade of the 1980s. And the sales of cassettes skyrocketed. They basically people stopped using records because of the fact that they could, have something more portable to take with them. But one of the biggest problems that they had with cassettes in the 80s was that people were shoplifting them too much because
Oh, yeah.
they're nice and small and easy to stick in your pocket or your bag or whatever it is. So you probably remember this just like I do. They used to have these what are known as spaghetti boxes. Or locked display cases. Remember you'd have like the little cassette and you'd have this huge piece of plastic around it.
Yes. Yep. Yep.
And
it was
now
always
we
like a
know
carrying case. Yeah.
exactly. It was a carrying case that only the people in the store had the specific key in order to release that. You know, so yeah. And then basically CDs started becoming more popular. And once they became more popular, so cassettes, first of all, just to give you an idea, cassettes between 1990, they sold 442 million cassettes. Okay, in 1990. How many cassettes do you think they sold in 2007 compared to that? Remember, 442 million in 1990. That's an astounding number.
Maybe like
17 years later. 274,000. That's it. That's just crazy. They started using them for audiobooks also. And in 2002, most of the cassettes that people were buying were audiobooks. There was more than 50% of all the ones that were being sold at the time were for audiobooks, that people were buying were for audiobooks. And part of the problem was, is many of them were for out of print titles, which now people can only get them on these cassettes. You can't even get them on CDs because they never re-recorded them on CDs. Oh, and wow. The last car besides Brian's grandmother's car that had a cassette player option was the 2014 Tag AZ Aquila. I have no idea what that is, but you know, That was the car that you could buy in 2014. So we're talking, it's been 8 years since you can buy a car with a cassette player already installed in it. And I mean,
you don't even get CD players anymore. In most cars. And
you don't get them in
computers
either.
It wasn't that
either.
Long ago. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Oh, that's right. Yeah, right, for sure. Yeah.
And there was a lot of controversy in 2011 when the Oxford English Dictionary actually removed the phrase cassette player from the dictionary because it wasn't being used anymore. And then we got the final thing. The third thing is the compact discs, right? So what year do you think the compact disc was created?
Well, before 1987, that's for sure. Or 1987 at the very least.
Right. So it was created in 1982. And it was branded the digital audio compact disc. It's a digital optical disc data storage format. Right, that format was adapted to be used for data, which is what we know as a CD-ROM. And then there was the whole idea of having, write-once audio and data storage, the CDRs, and rewritable media, CDRW. There's a whole bunch of different types that were used here. Now, I remember that, you used to, buy the CD-ROMs, to play games and all that stuff in the early 90s and stuff, and It was fun to play on them, but thinking about the amount of storage that they had then compared to what they use today is just unbelievable.
Oh yeah.
When it was first introduced in 1982, a CD could store more data than a personal computer could. Okay, because most personal computers in 1982 were able to hold only 10 megabytes of storage.
Jeez.
And now it's the exact opposite. Because you can have a hard drive that will have, you can put thousands of CDs basically on one hard drive with the amount of storage that people use. It's just unbelievable. And just to give you an idea of the jump between the sales. So in 2004, the worldwide sales of any type of CDs was 30 billion. Okay. And wow. How much do you think it jumped in 2007? Remember, from 2004, 3 years, from 30 billion to, what would you say?
No, I'll say 60 billion, let's say. We'll double.
200 billion. There were some 200 billion CDs. And what's interesting is that nowadays that's pretty much obsolete.
Yeah,
because
right.
Most people are just using regular digital media. You're not going to have them on different discs and stuff like that. So it continues, and what we have here is people that are related to the music aspects of this movie. You have the musical score, musical editor, sound editors, the scoring mixer, orchestrator, all the different types of music. There's a total in this minute, there's a total of 41 credits that are listed here for the jobs. Some of them have more than one person on them. Did any of these credits jump out at you as being a little strange?
No, the only thing that jumped out at me was the sheer number of sound and soundtrack people that were listed. But other than that, like I try to look and see if any name kind of jumped out that I recognize. It's like maybe oh they're going to go on to do something else. And at the time, it did not nothing, caught my eye. So something tells me you're about to you caught something. You're about to tell us.
I've had a few. Had a few. So first of all, they list the assistant to John Hughes, and then the secretary to John Hughes, and then the assistant to John Candy. Now, Steve Martin doesn't have an assistant, which I found to be a little strange. Why would the two of them have and he wouldn't? I don't know the answer as to why. It's possible that he's someone who didn't need it. I don't know. And then the final credit here before this minute ends is what really shocked me. Okay. It says Steve Martin's hair designed. It says Steve Martin's hair designed by. So why would it say hair designed by? He's designing, someone was designing his hair. You'd say
Yeah, I would
I
say styled.
hairstylist, exactly, but hair designed. And the woman who is listed here, Toni Ann Walker. So she has 72 credits in movies that she worked as a hairstylist. And 12 of those, she has credits as Steve Martin's hairstylist. So I thought that's pretty interesting that we get that.
Hey, stick with people you know.
Apparently. Yeah. We'll get more to that tomorrow, I think. Or maybe, yeah, I think it's tomorrow that we're going to talk about something with that. So, yeah. So, I mean, that's all I pretty much have for this minute. Sorry to all the other people in the credits that we're not giving a shout out to. We don't have hours to talk just about each and every one of these people. So even though today is Thursday, so every Monday we have the segment Martin Monday, where my guest will tell their top five Steve Martin performances. So today we're gonna hear from Brian about that. So Brian, what are your five favorite Steve Martin performances, starting from number five and working your way up to number one?
Okay, so starting from number five up to one, I will say number five is the Muppet movie.
Okay.
He had a great little cameo role in that. And in fact, if you don't mind, I actually do want to give him one honorable mention before I get to, I already did five, but honorable mention his SNL appearances throughout the years.
Yeah.
He's always been a great guest. Yeah, he's just one of the originals. It was, did the whole Five Timers Club and just always great whenever he's on.
Yeah,
So
completely
yeah,
agree with you on that.
number five, Muppet movie. Number four, Little Shop of Horrors. Small role, but memorable when he's in it. He's great. Number three, Roxanne. I just always liked that movie, especially as a kid. It was on HBO a lot. And number two is My Blue Heaven for me. I think that movie's underrated. He's awesome in that. He, I don't know if you know the story about My Blue Heaven. It's basically a sequel to Goodfellas, because was Henry Hill, is that his name from Goodfellas? The Ray Liotta plays. So the guy, the real life Henry Hill, was giving, he would have these phone interviews for whoever wrote the script or whatever for Goodfellas, and he was telling all about what it was like to be a mobster. Well, that guy's wife was also like a writer or producer or whatever, and she would talk to him too, and he would talk about his time being in witness protection agency, witness protection, and she wrote My Blue Heaven based on the conversations that they had with
Oh
him.
wow, I did not know that.
So yeah, it's amazing. So I was like, oh wow, you could watch Goodfellas, have the ending, and then you go right into My Blue Heaven, and it's a totally different take. And
Oh
then
wow.
of course my number one is The Jerk. I absolutely just love that movie. It's stupid, but I'm a huge fan.
Okay, that's fair. That is definitely fair. All right, thank you for that.
I know Planes, Trains, and Automobiles didn't make the cut, even though
That's okay.
it's a great movie.
It's okay if it didn't make the cut. There's, on Sunday, I'll be divulging, where everything is ranked from all of my guests. So we'll see.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. So
yeah, that'll be fun.
When everyone comes back on Sunday, they'll be able to hear that. But we still got 2 more days before we get there. But this is the final Steve Martin list before I'll give mine on Sunday. So.
Excellent.
People have to come back. Give a little teaser to come back on Sunday to hear that. But I mean, you should come back tomorrow and Saturday to hear Brian again also, but still. Right. So every day we have a segment called Off the Beaten Track, where either myself or my guest will give a little story of an adventure or misadventure that one of us has had over the course of our lives. So Brian, you have a story for us?
Yeah, I actually do. I tried to think of some stories that kind of related to the movie, and there was the scene where, they're driving down the road the wrong way, and the passing, the people on the other side are like, mm-hmm. "Hey, you're going the wrong way." So it made me think of this story. So I used to, when I was in the Marine Corps, I used to drive to Chapel Hill to visit a friend, and that was about 3 hours away from base. So, I routinely made this trip, and I would always make sure I didn't want to get in a lot of trouble, so I'd always go about 5 miles over the speed limit. Well, one day I'm heading back, and I'm in one of the bigger towns before I hit the the boonies and all that, and I get pulled over, and the cop is saying, "Hey, I caught
you." Are you in uniform?
I'm not in uniform. This is on a Sunday night, probably. I was in civilian attire. I may or may not have realized I was a Marine. I had my base stickers and all that. I should set it up. About a week prior, I was driving a little Ford Ranger at the time, manual transmission, and the thing died on me. It just died on the side of the road. I got stranded. I had to get a ride from a kindly stranger who took me to a gas station. Got it towed to the nearest Ford dealership, and I got a new transmission put in. All right, so that's that. So I'm driving 5 miles over the speed limit. Cop pulls me over, and I probably flashed my military ID because I always tried that shtick if it worked. Never worked near base, but outside of base, sometimes it might. So, all right. Well, long story short, he's like, "Hey, I paced you," and I'm like, I sir the crap out of cops, especially at that time. Yes sir, no sir, everything sir. Hey, I'm sorry, sir. How fast did you say I was going? I'm like, I admitted, I go, I went 5 miles over the speed limit. I got you going like 15 over or something like that. I'm like, sir, I'm like, that, I drive this all the time. I never do that. And he's like, well, I paced you. And I'm like, well, do you have the, of course I'm trying to be polite without being disrespectful. Like I'm trying to argue my case without being disrespectful, and I'm like, well, sir, I mean, I'm telling you, I just like I was doing like 70, not instead of 65. I'm like, yes, I'm admitting to speeding, but only 5 miles. I'm surprised you pulled me over. And he's like, you were doing like 80. And I'm like, that's just, sir, I just don't do that, and blah blah blah. And he's like, why pasty? I pasty. And I'm like, are you sure? Because I'm like, sir, I'm, so just that's going on and on. He finally gets frustrated with me, and he's like, look, do you want to argue with me all night? And I'm like, no, sir, I'm sorry. I did not mean to argue. I'm like apologizing. So he must have taken pity on me. He gives me a warning, a warning ticket, which in my state really doesn't mean a lot. You don't have to do anything with it. It's kind of like, hey, we got your number. We got your,
don't get pulled over again.
Yeah, exactly. Don't, especially tonight. Like, if you get pulled, I'm like, son, whatever. I'm like, I'm like, I don't know what that guy's problem was, but I didn't, I don't know, whatever. So it's like a week later, and the friend that I visit in Chapel Hill is now visiting me near base, and she's going to follow me back in my car, in her car. So there's a big stretch of land that, like, it just opens up. You get out of town, there's farmland, you just right down the highway. Very easy to speed and do that. And I'm blowing her doors off. She is way behind me in her car. And I'm like, she's got a lead foot. So I'm like, why is she not keeping up with me? And I slow down a little bit, and she's whoom, comes running up, you know, pulls beside me. And I roll down. I can tell she's trying to flag me down. And the speed limit is like 55, let's say,
okay,
at the time. And I roll the window down. She's yelling out over the, you know, the other window, "You're going 75. I look down at my speedometer. I'm doing 55. She's like, "You're going 75. Apparently, so I've like, we figured out what happened. Apparently, when they redid my transmission, they didn't calibrate something accurately. So the slower I went, you know, if I went 35 miles an hour, 30 miles an hour on base, I was doing about 30 miles an hour, maybe 32. But the further I got away, you know, the faster I went, the further I got away from the truth. And I was, even though I was looking at one thing, so that cop was correct. I was speeding.
Wow.
But according to my speedometer, I was dead on 5 miles over in a speed limit. I was really doing about 15 miles over, or even 20 at that point, whatever it was. And so I was like, all right, I'll follow you the rest of the way. And I had to take it back. And they, I had argued with Ford. I'm like, "You need to calibrate this." And they're like, "Well, that's an extra." I'm like, "No, you should have done it the first time." And so that was my experience with like somebody yelling at me on the highway that, you know, I was doing something wrong when I was totally unaware that I was doing something wrong.
Wow. That is such a great story. And it does fit in very well with this movie. So thank you for that. Mm-hmm. All right. Do you want to tell people how they can get in touch with you, Brian?
Yeah. I mean, I've got a couple of active podcasts right now, Hamilton Shot by Shot, where I'm going through the movie Hamilton. Well, the musical Hamilton, one song at a time. And that is just Hamilton _SBS at Twitter, if you want to find us there. I got Marvel Events Timeline podcast, which I believe is just they have a Facebook page. If you want to find the group for that, it's me and Travis Bow. We are doing Marvel Comics starting in the 30s, hitting every major event up till present day eventually.
Yeah, I really enjoy listening to that, even though each episode is like 2 hours.
Yeah, I know. We're working on that. And I think as we get into the individual issues where it's a longer story, they will be shorter but more frequent. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So we're getting there. We're still it's still early. We're finding our footing.
No, that's great. I enjoy listening to it. I'm not complaining from that perspective.
Great. I appreciate it. I'm glad to hear that, honestly. But that can be found, let's say, on Facebook I believe it's Marvel Events Baxter Building Break Room is a Facebook group if you want to just search for us there. And then my initial go at this Movies by Minutes thing has been the Marine Corps Movie Minute podcast, and that can just be found at Marine Corps Movie Pod on Instagram.
All right. Excellent. Thank you very much. And finding me is very simple also. First of all, you can go rate, review, and subscribe to any podcast you might be using to listen to this show. And finding me, just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Twitter. And you can go to my website. So, Brian, you feel like coming back again tomorrow?
Yes, I do.
All right. Great. So, until tomorrow, you're fine.
You're fine.